Hello, Baggies fans, and welcome to the latest episode of the Baggies broadcast with me, Johnny Dreary, and Mr. Lewis Cox in the early hours of Wednesday morning after we've watched a 2-0 win for Albion against Rotherham. For those who will have seen Marnie Cox's post-match video after the game, it wasn't the most enthralling with not a lot to talk about, but we've still got a little bit to discuss this evening. Coxie, how are you, mate? Albion fans are asking where you were on Saturday at Stoke. I mean, I know there's been a few jokes made about your absence from away games lately, but I don't think you can really take much responsibility for your latest trip. Just tell us all about it, mate.
No, yeah, wild accusations around the Albion press room, Johnny, as you'd have heard tonight or last night. Yeah, I turned, believe it or not, my fountain of youth. I turned 30 over the weekend, day of Stoke actually, and I was whisked away by the better half on a surprise continental trip, mate. So I was, dare I say, somewhere a little more prettier than the Potteries on Saturday. I was hanging on your every year update though, mate, and yeah, disappointed to see Albion throw away 2 points, but yeah, I was sunning it again, you know. Obviously must be paid too much, Johnny, in this game. That must be I'm glad to update my final absence of the campaign. Most of them, to in my defence, including my own wedding and honeymoon, I would like to say have not been my fault this season. I don't know if calling my own wedding day is my fault. Perhaps it is. But, yeah.
Well, you proposed, mate, so, yeah, it's your fault, really.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. As you can imagine, Johnny, I wasn't behind anything else involved. But here we are, back for the, you know, back to see the Albion return to winning ways, wasn't I, over Rotherham. And, you know, we've got, what is it, 4 games of the regular season left. And dare I say, another 3 after that, hopefully.
Hopefully. Certainly 2. Fingers crossed. We're almost there.
You'll be glad to know I haven't got a holiday booked for May the 26th, mate.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. Just make sure there's no more surprises there.
Yes, as things stand.
yeah. I'm sure you've got no annual leave left, to be honest, pal. Must not be much left in the diary. But yeah, as we said, we're recording this early hours of the morning on the back of a game which was pretty much uneventful. So what we're going to do, I'm going to read out some of the questions first that Albion fans have asked, really, because the game largely went down without much controversy, apart from Albion's penalty, which we're going to talk about because I've had a really interesting tweet in the last 20 minutes or so. But this is sort of different sort of convention to what we usually do. But do you know what? I'm gonna bump up the Kettle and Toaster Man advert at the top of this podcast, as always.
I'll be happy.
They will be, yeah. As always, our podcast here at the Express and Star are sponsored by the Kettle and Toaster Man, your graded product specialist down in Thorns Road in Briley Hill, who has just a mountain of top quality products and top quality prices. Recently, what have we been bringing you recently? Cordless vacuums and massive style, I think, American fridge freezers or really big fridge freezers. And I'm going to bring it up, always the air fryer, but I might be giving Kettle and Toaster Man, not literally like, but a shop a bit of a battering, because I'm hopefully getting a new property soon. So I'm gonna make a list. I'm gonna get on his website, and he's gonna get some serious trade from me. I'm hoping he might give me like a West Brom discount code or something, just to use myself, because I'm hopefully gonna give him that much business because I know how good his products are. But he's got all the top brands at very, very, very low and reasonable prices. So if you want to get your hands on some Kettle and Toaster Man goods, head along to the kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Right, we're going to go.
See, Johnny, you are what's known in the game as a proper football reporter, even buying a new property for the off season, so you don't miss. You're a true trooper, not missing any games. I hope your moving weekend isn't penciled in for May the 25th and 26th.
Oh yeah, I'll make sure. If it is, I'll have to bump it back. I will say as well that there was a bit of I've a little story Albion related. So I've just joined the West Bromwich Albion Supporters Golf Society, and I played in my first event on Sunday at Bewdley Pines. I came a respectable 10th out of 26, Coxie, you'll be pleased to know. But yeah, so I've joined them, and they did actually have one of their events penciled in for the 26th of May, but it has now been moved under the assumption that Albion will be in the playoff final. So, you know, a lot of confidence in the clubhouse after the game on after the round on Sunday. So yeah, they've moved theirs. You know, I'll certainly won't be coinciding any sort of big date with me for that day.
You know one end of your golf bat from the other, don't you, Johnny?
Well, I didn't play too bad, to be honest, mate. Didn't play too bad. Good I was man. doing all right in the first nine holes, and then I thought, you know what, could be in bad books here with West Brom fans if I come and scoop up the victory on the first appearance. So I'd like to say the second nine was a self-sabotage, but it was, but not on purpose.
Not intentional,
but all good fun anyway. Got to meet some very good Baggies fans, a couple of Baggies broadcast listeners actually, as well, which was good. But excellent. Yeah, right, we're going to move on to questions. I'm going to read this one out though, and we'll talk about briefly about that penalty decision. Someone's just tweeted me saying someone's already updated the referee's Wikipedia page. Jeff Eltringham was the referee tonight. There's Jeff Eltringham, born 1980, as an English football referee. He was born in County Durham and was raised as a West Bromwich Albion fan, his Wikipedia page now reads, which is, you know, from a Rotherham persuasion, you probably couldn't argue about that with the penalty that was given in the first half, which was absolutely, like, shocking. I'm so glad that Rotherham are already relegated, because it would just be horrific. Because it was just such... I don't think I've seen a worse decision.
Learned, Johnny, since leaving the Hawthorns, actually, that our friend Mr. Eltringham, wait till you hear this if you're not aware, was actually the man in the middle at Loftus Road recently for the hand of Sid.
Oh, God, really? Oh, he's had a bad few weeks, hasn't he?
So he's, a big favourite of Albion's, really. Can we get him booked in for May? Is he up to anything? I think he's probably, dare I say it, performed himself out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, do you know what? Maybe he was raised an Albion fan. Because, that is a few bad weeks of Mr. Elcher. Sure,
it's an awful call, wasn't it?
It's an awful call. But, like, the linesman's got to help him out there. Because the linesman's, like, level with it. You can see that it's not in the box.
Yeah, I mean, I dared to mention on our post-match video, I dared to mention VAR, didn't I? Which, I'll be honest, as a footy reporter in a championship, it's the last thing I want to see or be involved in. But, we've had this debate going back months and probably years, haven't we, about the technology in this division. And I don't know, if this was 3-4, 5-0 tonight, but that incident at 1-0, it might not have decided the game, but it genuinely... You know, probably took it away from Rotherham, didn't it?
Yeah.
They, if it was 1-0, they'd come very close to equalising, and might have been a different second half. But let's be fair, if Thomas Asante had one shooting boot on last night, didn't he? If he had both of them, then he'd have taken on the match ball, and it would have been a rout. Let's be honest. So, Rotherham won't be happy, but. As you say, at least their season and safety didn't lie on it. And fair play to them and their 180 fans that travelled, because their record is nothing but grim, is it? Let's be honest, that is horrific. 18 months, one away. One last away win 18 months ago, best part of 18 months. I mean, could you imagine?
Imagine if you just go to away games, Johnny,
just think, you were fed up with a 2-0 win. Imagine how you'd feel covering Rotherham. It was good to catch up with my Rotherham counterpart, Paul Davis, from the, I can't remember the name of it, Rotherham. I think it's Rotherham Advertiser. And how he keeps a sort of sane, positive head on it is beyond me, to be honest. Could you imagine covering that kind of record? I mean, wow. I don't know what to say, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a pretty rank one. I will say as well, an Albion fan has tweeted me that it is justice for when West Brom played Rotherham 22 years ago. And Albion fans might remember this, and you can forgive me for getting a score wrong, but Albion played Rotherham the final few games of the season before they promoted to the Premier League. And they scored a ghost goal. It basically went over the line and it wasn't given. And Albion drew 1-1. Obviously, in the end, it didn't cost them promotion. Maybe last night was a bit of revenge, 22 years on. from that incident. But we're going to get into questions anyway. We've got 6 or 7 questions that we're going to go in. We don't tend to give our questions an awful lot of time because we have a load of other stuff to talk about, but there's not a great deal to chat about after the game. So we're going to start with Sunil Patel. It was said, do you think we intend to play with such a low tempo? It seems to be the hallmark of our play under Corbran, or is it just the only way these players can play? Would be nice to be a bit quicker at times. I think Sunil's right. I got frustrated with it early in the campaign. I think when Albion play fast, quick football through the thirds and through the lines, you know, as all these coaches say, Albion can rip teams apart. But I think it's generally at home probably counteracted by the fact that sides come and sit in and don't really leave much space. You know, I think Albion do try and do it. But I think tonight, probably in the second half, the laboured pace of the game was probably down to the fact that they were 2-0 up and Rotherham never really looked like getting back in.
Not in danger, yeah. I think Carlos Corbran's been asked this many times over the last 18 months, I have to say. And more often than not, his answer is it's not necessarily by design or what he wants or what he instructs. And he wants quicker, sharper, better tempo. So I think it's a bit of both to answer the question there. I think we've learned now, well, we learned a long time ago with Corbran that he doesn't bring a swashbuckling sort of high tempo, free flowing brand of football. You know, that murder ball that came with Marcelo Bielsa, you know, his former mentor who he worked under, that the intensity levels that Leeds were so famous for when Corbran was involved there. It's not that, is it? No, it's not. I don't think it's fully by design, but I think it's part of Corbran's game and ethos to be considered measured tactically, absolutely bob on with and without the ball, with, you know, where you're supposed to be, what you're meant to be doing. So I think it's a bit of both. I do think, look, we're still seeing Corbran by and large manage what he inherited, because he's had no sort of funds to make anything significant happen, really, other than loans and the odd free. So I am interested. I do think he's a very high level of coach. I really do. And I think most think that. And I'm intrigued to see what he could do with how he considers his type, style of player, and perhaps in some cases a better caliber of player. I think it could be a slightly different style, a different look to how the team operate. But I think there's an element that a Carlos Corbran style is more methodical and thought out and than heavy metal, full-blooded, high-octane.
Yeah,
I think that's just the way it is, and I think most Albion fans are probably used to that. I can totally understand why. I mean, I can sort of half understand why just some watching it week in, week out want it to be crazy chaotic all the time. But I think it's also worth saying that football and championship football has moved on from that kind of harem scarum, helter-skelter basketball. Yeah. And I think that's come from the top, hasn't it? It's come from your Guardiola at the top, and not necessarily Klopp, but the sort of Guardiola-ites who want to marry up that style of, maybe tiki-taka is the wrong phrase, but passing it from the back, moving it side to side slowly. I mean, I haven't covered the division for a massively long amount of time, but even watching it going back years, it's not the game or level of football it was even a few years ago, is it really? And that level of and type of coaches filtering down, these young head coaches we're seeing at clubs now, they want to play a certain way. Yeah, even the young coaches coming from abroad, like a Corbran, they want a more possession considered style. I don't, you know, it's seldom sort of long direct. I'm not hammering long direct balls here, by the way, but it's very often not that anymore, is it? And I think all of that is a bit to answer Sunil's question there. I think it's partly by design, partly by this is what he is managing in terms of players. I do think it can develop in terms of when the squad changes, and it is likely to change quite a bit, you would say, in the summer. So I'm intrigued to see that, but I suppose the bottom line is you look at the league table, look at the record and the form, and whatever Carlos Corberan's doing is working. You have to say, I think that has to be emphasised at the moment. There can't be too many grumbles at that, can there? While I understand some fans want to see more attacks and quicker attacks.
Yeah, no, I think you've probably hit the nail on the head there. Tom Hunt has asked, do you think we will continue to see this extent of rotation in the lead up to the playoffs? I suppose you could caveat that by saying when the playoffs are secured, which will look sort of there now. But do we expect Carlos to rotate things to the extent that he did tonight?
Oh, Johnny, quickly for the record, Sunil Patel's question I meant to add before I handed back over to you there. Hugely, huge fan of Sunil Patel, regular listeners' Twitter feed. Certainly since the takeover of Shilam Patel, who he regularly claims to be a relative or I don't know, alter ego or whatever. It's keeps us amused, doesn't it?
Does so, keep us so amused, well, yeah.
I mean Carlos Corberan would never say this, obviously, and I don't even think he thinks it really. And in fact, in his press conference, the first thing he said, you were there, Johnny, and heard him say it to me. The first thing he did at the start of his post-match presser was heap praise on Rotherham's character and personality and how they played. But I think you've got to look at it as we're at home where we're strong against the worst team in the division, who are down with obviously nothing to play for and very few players available. And if ever there's a game where we can make a couple of changes, give a full debut, allow some regulars the whole night off on the bench, one that's flying in Dean Garner, a chance to refresh, recover, it's probably this game. I think it's that. I think you probably don't make those changes for Sunderland on Saturday, albeit I take that Sunderland are mid-table with nothing to play for, and some of you in that as potentially a fairly straightforward game, but I think Rotherham, just due to the limited opposition, look, their record is their record for a reason. Now, Corbyn made the point how they beat Millwall a few games ago, and then Millwall have recently beaten Leicester, but sorry, look at Rotherham's record. It speaks for itself, doesn't it? And I said after the game, I don't think Albion had to get into third gear tonight, really. And, had Rotherham struck fairly lucky with a goal, I think Albion could have really knocked on the door big time. But I think it was probably down to the case of the opposition. Now, I think we'll see Mowat return on Saturday in midfield. I think Adam Reach was probably Albion's best player last night, or impressed me the most at left back. But I don't know, I still think we'll see Townsend on Saturday. I think we'll see Grady on Saturday. Jed Wallace probably be over his illness. Whether he's well enough to start, not sure, but I think we'll see the first team regulars back. And who knows? I mean, I haven't done the maths yet. Probably should have done it before recording this, but I think I'm right in saying, Johnny, I don't think Albion can mathematically secure top six on Saturday. No. Albeit, having said that,
I think they can
the gap's currently 9 points, so they could go 12.
So if Cov lose, Cov will have 4 left, and if Albion win, there'll be 12 to play. Yeah. So obviously, I haven't got the table in front of me. I'm not sure what goal difference looks like.
And Albion do have the better goal difference than Cov by 8 goals, so that's almost very close to mathematical, isn't it?
But Cov would need to win every game. Albion
would need to lose. And Albion have to lose, yeah.
That'd be an 8 goals win.
But I mean, obviously, that's highly unlikely. So, by all intents and purposes, it could be all but secured on Saturday. And I think, what does that leave? Leicester, Sheffield, Preston. I think we touched on this last time, maybe. I think, look, there's an element of if player X is... They have these levels, don't they, in sort of red zone where a player's... The medical team decide that a player's really getting close to being overloaded and is looking a bit tired, or maybe not performing quite at the level or not running as far, they'll bring them out. And they can sort of happily do that in the knowledge that they're secure and it's not going to cost a crucial result. I don't think it'll be to the extent we saw on Wednesday night. I think Sheffield Wednesday, looking at the league table, shouldn't be too much of a challenge, should it? But I think there's an element of saying, Albion want to. I remember us talking about this a couple of pods ago, get as many positive results as they can in these final four games. And by the way, Johnny, when we spoke last time and we did a little prediction, I think for the last six, started off with Stoke draw and Rotherham win, so on track for our predictions we made. But I think it'll just be a little bit horses for courses. It'll be, look, let's see when those attacking players behind the striker need a freshen up. Let's see when Matt Phillips is maybe ready for the off. Let's see how often we can give Josh Madger minutes, whether BTA can keep going. Let's see if we can get Envia another start at some point, maybe for Yakushlu now Moat's had a break. Can Shemi Ajayi play? You start from the off once or twice. I thought he was really good actually from the bench against Rotherham. If Wallace is still feeling that bug, does he have to come straight back on Saturday, or can we continue with Fellows and Johnson on the flanks? One of those, really. I think that'll be the case. But I think behind the Rotherham selection was a bit of luck. Realistically, we should be able to give the night off to at least a couple. We have a few here and come through unscathed, because the last thing Albion or Corbran will want to do is sort of stunt momentum and form. And absolutely shout out to this 10-game unbeaten run and one defeat in 14, because that is a hell of an achievement, isn't it? That takes some doing at any point of the season, let alone this crucial point. So, you don't want to break it up, do you? Want to take this kind of we don't know how to lose mindset into the semi-finals, obviously.
Spencer George has asked, what impact, if any, does the announcement that Blues new stadium have on the future of West Brom? Do we risk becoming an afterthought for future generations and lose them to Villa and Blues, who potentially will dominate the Midlands as attraction venues, either on status or facility? Good question. Good left field question. This is the news that the Blues have bought a big parcel of land which they're going to redevelop, potentially new stadium, training ground, etc., etc. I don't know how I feel about that. I think this is a question that might knock some Albion fans. But for me, Albion have always been, in terms of club size, and this doesn't come in bring into question sort of history and what they've won, but in terms of fan base size, obviously they're small, they're not as big as Villa, and I don't think they're big as Wolves either. I think Wolves, you look at the crowd that Wolves command compared to Albion, which is probably hard for some people to stomach. In terms of Blues, probably as well, Blues, I know they don't command the massive crowds now, but they are sort of the main, the second city team. I know Villa are the biggest side. But I don't think it'll probably have much of an impact, to be honest. You never know, it might do. But it's not something that I'm particularly worried about.
No, to a point, it's sort of off pitch versus on pitch, isn't it? If Albion can.
Of course it is.
Look, this is potentially, we're at the very, very, very infant stages of what is hopefully an exciting chapter for Albion, aren't we, under new ownership? And all the signs are good, but I mean, as we discovered with the accounts barely a week ago or whatever, there are some challenges ahead big time still with the finances, but ideally with the aid of promotion and sort of building there. I mean, that's sort of a rocket forward, isn't it, in terms of if Albion can get up. That's a massive kind of head start on the Shilin Patel era. But say they don't, it's building stability step by step and for a brighter future. So in terms of that on the pitch, and Albion find themselves in the Premier League, be it next season or season after or whenever, they're an attraction by way of being in the Premier League, same as, ditto and hope to achieve what Villa and Wolves have achieved over the last couple of seasons. That's a marker, isn't it, really? And those two have done it from the champ, different periods, so sort of show that there's a route there for something similar or something to be achieved. Obviously, you want to go step by step, first of all, by staying in the division, something Albion obviously couldn't do last time. So off the field, you mentioned something that will probably knock a few fans. No pun intended, but I always feel you're on very dodgy ground when talking about different stadiums and stadium moves. I mean, if you were to ask fans, do a poll on, do you want to see your club, you leave their historic home or move from the Hawthorns? I mean, I think it'd be very heavily against, personally. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you think, Johnny, or listeners, but yeah, that's look, I don't think it's something that has. Well, I don't know from Intel for definitively, but I'd be surprised if that's something that's been discussed. I'd be surprised if it's anything that's discussed in the near future. Yeah, even if Albion were going to have an established 5 years in the Premier League, does it become a conversation? I'm not sure. So it is an interesting question. Agreed. I mean, yeah, Blues are in a different place, aren't they, really? And have been in a different place for the last 10 years and, you know, have big problems ahead, you know, potentially, certainly on the field, despite their new ownership. Hopefully there are smoother waters ahead for Albion's new ownership. It's a good question, though. It's a good question. I think the club has a core fan base, doesn't it? And it's been, what, maintaining 20,000 plus crowds this season. I know one defeat in 14 since the Southampton game, obviously, when Mr. Patel was in for the first time. Because there haven't been too many defeats of late, Albion's position hasn't really been threatened in the table. And you wonder, like, had there been 2, 3, 4 defeats in that run and sort of slipped down to 6 and having to win these games more dramatically, it might have sort of livened the place up a little bit. I think there's a bit of that, certainly. I agree about, you know, there's some sections that, yeah, I think the more you create in a game, the more upbeat and loud, I suppose, the support is, and probably comes with tempo as well. And there have been games when Albion haven't created much, haven't they? Let's be honest. Last night was probably another, albeit Thomas Asante, you know, spurned a few late on. What else can be done, Johnny, really? What else? There's often chatter about the pre-game playlist, isn't there? The tunes.
I tend to agree, what's going on on the pitch, really.
Yeah, we've welcomed back the Liquidator, which has been great, and it's good pre-game, but it doesn't seem to. I think maybe how you start a game. I'm quite often at home, I sort of think we seem to see a good 5 or 10 minutes for Albion where the crowd are right there, and it's just, can they take advantage of that? And if not, it sort of falls and slips off in at times to a little bit of a slumber. I'll tell you what's an interesting debate, and I'm not really sort of pro or against it, but I've seen it mentioned as well. A standing specific singing section, I think some fans have called for. I don't know if I'm talking more specific standing or specific singing. And I know obviously there are parts of the ground like the back of the Smerwick and that pride themselves or the place to go if you want to be more vocal or whatever. But I've seen some call for that. I don't know if that's something, you know, the club would look into if raised. I suppose it's the place for supporter groups, really, isn't it, in terms of be it the Assembly or S4A or even, you know, other sort of supporter group meetings who, you know, wish to raise that, and whether the club sort of look into it with them at other methods. I do think, as you say, Johnny, a lot derives from what's happening realistically. And there have been games where it's been okay. But I think the lack of drama, which is strange to be talking about, is a factor. I think it is. I think there's much getting away from it. I don't know about the attendances have been decent, haven't they? They've been strong, actually, by and large, throughout the attendances, which you'd sort of expect. Sorry, mate, I think you lost me for a second. Got me. As I was saying, the ticket prices, exceptional, such great value. Certainly on children, it attracts a lot of, you know, the demographic they've wanted to attract. Now, obviously, you've got youngsters in the crowd. Perhaps it's not going to be the most boisterous, the most loud. I know before that, when Albion didn't have a low average age, there was the other end of the age spectrum in terms of there's a lot of 50, maybe 60 plus sort of averages around the stand. Now, are that is that going to be the most vocal and boisterous? I don't know. I think all of these things we mention here possibly contribute to the answer there. But it has been flat, at times this season, there's no doubt. I think the lie, doom and gloom, is another factor. Under the previous ownership, I think fans got a little bit out of touch with it, a little bit, not out of love, but, felt that sort of helplessness in terms of their club being mishandled or taken away or whatever. So maybe there's a bit of that. And yes, that should have eased under Shilan Patel, but perhaps that has to come with time, maybe. So I think there are probably a few factors when you really take a step back and think about it. I do agree that the main factor is what's happening on the pitch. And those comfortable sort of routine wins. Rotherham probably last night is a perfect example. And yes, everyone's turned up against Rotherham expecting Albion to win, haven't they? Which is fair enough. Look, they should look at the table. And with that brings a expectancy, almost like a, well, I'm not going to cheer unless we score. And I totally get it. It's not a, the last thing is a criticism. It's just how football fans are. Happens at the top, happens throughout the Premier League, throughout the divisions. I think, if you win 2-0 and score two first half goals and not a lot happens in the second half, it's not going to be very boisterous, is it, really? That's just sort of how it is. I think most of it comes from what's happening on the pitch, but I do think there's a number of factors.
Yeah. Richard Downing's asked, with Blues moving to a new stadium, could you see Albion following suit in the future? Do you see plans for the Hawthorns to be redeveloped?
We've covered that, haven't we?
I can't see him moving, to be honest.
Redevelopment, I think redevelopment is certainly a bigger, more likely. Be interesting to, when we next get the opportunity to chat with someone on the record at the club about that, see what's been thought about or said. But again, yes, we're talking about sellouts, but I think are a long way from the need potentially. Albeit, you want to drive your revenues and income as much as you can, clearly. Extending the capacity by thousands, whatever is. Are the bums on seats going to arrive? I suppose is the question. Or is it, is it needed? Is it required? So, one for a while away, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Final question. Robin Banks, is this a question for you, Coxie? Who do we want to face at Wembley? I'll leave that one to you. I'll leave the important ones to you.
Yeah, thanks. Not Norwich, not Norwich, assuming they finish six. Just because considerably the worst of the top six, the worst of the bunch, I just get a little bit of that sod's law, they've crept into it last. Don't fancy them, albeit should beat the worst of the bunch. On the basis of, I've seen Albion take 4 points from them this season, I have to say I fancy Albion more against Ipswich than Southampton.
Ipswich.
However, it's that sort of chicken and egg, isn't it, Johnny? I'd fancy Albion to get through Ipswich in the semis more than I'd fancy them against Southampton in the semis. But it does keep looking like it will be Southampton, doesn't it? Let me just have a quick look at the table. I mean, there's still two games behind, aren't they, the Saints? So the table doesn't really tell a full picture yet. I mean, Southampton got to win both of those games in hand to trail Leeds by 3 points in third. So if Russell Martin's men are going to get above fourth and it's not going to be Southampton, they've got a hell of a job on, really. However, as I think we've said before, I think playing first at the Hawthorns in the semis will be useful for Albion, for Corbrand's Albion. And I think that could be a bit of a trump card. But yeah, I mean, look, we saw Norwich beat Ipswich, didn't we, the other day? Maybe my initial answer was daft and Norwich are the team you want to play at Wembley. But I think I saw some Ipswich fans caution, sort of nervously tweeting the other day. These lot are going to do it, aren't they, in terms of Norwich being pretty bang average all season and then somehow sneak up, probably at Ipswich's expense. So, Ipswich, ideally.
Yeah, Ipswich, there you go. There's your answer, Robin Banks. Baggy Sands, thanks for your questions. Coxie, just before we sort of talk about Saturday, finish on that, I think we should just get a little bit of explanation for you on the back of the accounts which came out last week, which we knew weren't going to look great on the back of Gouch and Lai's sort of final year or whatever at Albion, and the expectation they're not going to look great next year either. So I just wanted to for you to just sort of speak for a couple of minutes on that and just explain to Albion fans the situation and sort of why they will look worse next year. You know, we've had that sort of stated, and obviously there is the, you know, the rainbow over the Hawthorns at the moment, which is sort of shined there by Shilin Patel, and better times are coming, but on paper it's not going to look good for a little while, is it?
Yeah, I mean, most of all, Johnny, obviously, the accounts we had to June 23, obviously working a year behind, were the final season with parachute payments, the final parachute payments from the previous relegation from the Premier League, and obviously the withdrawal of that for this current season, 23-24, is going to take a massive hit, and that will be a massive, massive reduction next year. And the accounts are going to be startling because of that. You know, there's no getting away from that. Other things will lessen. I mean, turnover is going to heavily reduce as well. The loss section of the accounts, which is obviously sort of the, along with the turnover and stuff, is the headline grabber, so to speak. Is the one Albion need to be cautious of, obviously. It was a report, Albion reported to companies as a loss of 11 million, didn't they, to June 2023. And that's where the club, people who have looked into this and read about this will know, but for those that don't, that's where the club need to be careful. And, you know, these will be sailing close to problems and choppy waters in terms of financial fair play and restraints, specifically to profit and sustainability. Now, current rules, which, you know, by no means set in stone moving forward into the future, as far as we're aware and reports say, but at the moment, these profit and sustainability rules that have seen Premier League clubs get sanctioned for breaching them in the Championship, you can only lose £39 million in three years, three seasons, three set of accounts. Now, that's 11. I mean, Albion were in profit until these sets, but that's an £11 million loss. It was actually a £7.6 million loss in group, which is where the EFL take their records from. So let's talk about a £7.6 million loss for the club's parent company, West Bromwich Albion Group. We understand and we expect and we're told that accounts for next season are going to take a hit in terms of loss. Yeah, that loss figure is going to be considerably higher, really higher. And that when you look at that total of getting close to, you know, £7 million loss, as I say, on to next season, I'm not going to speculate a number as to what, because they are in terms of these profit and sustainability, and it's been reported and we've suggested that the cost control model of financial fair play may be brought in, that's more on your squad overall salary being related to the club's turnover and how much you can operate at there. So I think that's something that League One and League Two operate at, that, by the way, having a squad salary relative to a certain percent of your turnover on a yearly basis. So I think Championship clubs by and large want to bring themselves in aligned with the rest of how the EFL operate like that. And it's a UEFA model, I believe. So that could happen. That could be incorporated. There could be, you know, there are meetings and talks about that and how that will change. But again, this is all ifs, buts and maybes. At the moment, the model that's in operation, there's work to be done for Albion. And it certainly be made for some interesting viewing. Interesting writing this time next year when the figures are released and we find out just how close, you know, we obviously we'll have 2 years worth of losses, and obviously be able to calculate just how steep they are and how close Albion will be, will be treading towards, you know, problems in terms of league rules and stuff. Again, another interesting thing I think from the accounts last time was Dara O'Shea's 7 million exit to Burnley, recorded somewhere in the mid to late end of June last summer, in time for the accounting costs for these accounts that we've seen. So Dara's, yeah, 7 million received there, which the club really needed to make happen. Clearly, obviously, an academy graduate, which was more useful in terms of pure profit, was crucial in reducing that 11 million, you know, loss that. So it shows you how Albion are having to operate really in these times. Obviously, it incorporated some, you know, well, it was all of Gao Chenlai's final full year as owner, wasn't it? When investment just, well, maybe ran out or wasn't there or wasn't willing to be there. So it's been, it's sort of segments of the challenging time being laid bare, isn't it, really? And next year's figures will be the most difficult chapter, I think, revealed. And yeah, job ahead for the new owner, certainly, and those, you know, your likes of your Mark Miles, MD of the club, and on the footballing side, obviously Carlos Corbran and certainly Ian Pearce on the recruitment side to weather Albion through that storm. I think, I mean, they are, you know, they're in safe hands now, I think, in terms of what we expect and what we believe of Shilan Patel. However, you know, and hands that shouldn't and won't put the club any further in danger. However, that doesn't make it any less of a challenge to sort of manoeuvre to sail Albion through these sort of choppy waters and into the clear, because the restrictions are there, and Albion at some point you feel will be close to them. And it's going to be a fascinating summer, I think, Johnny, when it comes to the player exits. It's going to be a really, really interesting summer, and what Albion can and can't do with all of these players out of contract, all of these senior players who are fair earners to big earners, and how many can realistically be kept, and what Corbran can do on the back of those that leave, or what he can offer those that might be leaving. All paints a very interesting but unclear picture, I would say.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Coxie, cheers for that. Cheers for clearing up a few points there. We're just finally going to wrap up because it's 20 to 2 and I want to go to bed. We'll talk about Sunderland. Sunderland, the visitors on Saturday. Sat down in 13th, one win in the last five, had a good result against Leeds. Quite similar to the other game, the reverse fixture that they're in under caretaker charge again. After the sacking of, I was going to say Ian Beale, when Michael Beale. Obviously, they sacked Tony Mowbray the last time. Sacked Tony Mowbray the last time Albion played them, and they've obviously sacked then Michael Beale. Coxie, it sort of leans towards a home win, but I think it'll be a little bit different probably than what we saw against Rotherham.
Yeah. I saw someone say, I'd have to check this, excuse me, while I just look as I speak. I think I read they've got Jack Clark back in and around it, Sunderland. I don't know if he's been missing for a period or how long he's been out. Obviously, one of the divisions sort of top players, let's be honest. And they've back-to-back stalemates, haven't they? Back-to-back 0-0 Sunderland, just having a look at it since that home 5-1 humbling to Blackburn. They've back-to-back 0-0s, the latest Tuesday night at Leeds. So, yeah, I mean, when I look at Sunderland and see where are they in the table, middle of the road, aren't they? 13th with very little to play for. Had a very indifferent, middling kind of chaotic season, really, when you look across it all. I still look at their squad and think there's some tidy players there that can do something on their day. Now it's lacking in depth, and they've lacked a goal scorer all season, haven't they? They haven't had a recognised striker who can score a goal, and that's been their Achilles heel, as well as the dodgy management decision and tenure. So I think the basis that Albion can, you know, all but sew up this top six spot, and the fact that Sunderland have very little on the line, your points in Albion's favour, doesn't it? Having something to strive for. However, it doesn't work like that. I think Albion's strength at home, their record at the moment, their strength on their home patch, makes me confident. However, I think, again, going back a pod or two, I think I put this one down to a draw then, which was my sort of surprise call. And that wouldn't shock me. A draw on Saturday. Now, there'll be those sort of glass half full supporters who'll say, well, 4 points from the two games from Rotherham and Sunderland, it's not terrible. Most, you know, would and should rightly expect 6 points, but I don't think it'd be plain sailing just because Sunderland are 13th with nothing to play for. I just don't. I think they've got threats, haven't they? In obviously Clark and the young Bellingham, and have they still got Patrick Roberts there, haven't they? He's a good player. Dan Neal and Ekwa in midfield, I like. And they got a good keeper there in Patterson. So 09's a quality all-round player, isn't he? So look, some players at this level I really like. And I don't think it'll be easy, Johnny. I don't think it'll be easy. I think Albion by the odd goal or a draw is probably where my head is.
Yeah, hopefully you're right, pal. Coxie, as always, thanks for your time. And with that yawn, we're going to end tonight's podcast. Albion have edged closer. Albion have edged closer to the playoffs, and we are almost there. Hopefully, another massive stride on Saturday against Sunderland. Thank you for listening. Until next time, from me, Coxie, Boing Boing.
Boing Boing.